The title is a little bit different than what I had submitted originally, because I had thought about giving a talk primarily around issues around Vietnamese American health, but it turns out that I don't have enough materials actually for a 20 or 30 minute talk, primarily because there's a lack of research being done on that population. So what I wanted to do was to actually talk a little bit about the health, but also about some efforts that we've been doing to address the health of this population. No personal financial relationship, but in interest of full disclosure, I am Vietnamese American. So, just quickly, social demographics. I'll just go over reviewing some major health problems, and then, time permitting, which we should have a little bit of talk about community-based participatory research by Vietnamese Americans. So this is from the last Intercenso estimate. I think these numbers will be a lot higher after this year's census. There's approximately about 1.3 million Vietnamese Americans. And basically, most of them, at least above the age of 18, are immigrants. They came basically in three waves. The first is the post-war refugees, about within a year or two after the end of the war in 1975. And then there was a huge migration in the late 70s and early 80s that's colloquially called the boat people. And some of you may be old enough to remember some of those images. And then in the 90s, there's some organized program called the Orderly Departure Program and the Humanitarian Operations, where people left legally through the two government working together. And these people were specific groups of people like Amerasians, people who were South Vietnamese politicians and soldiers who were subjected to political imprisonment, and their family members, and also family members of those who came over earlier. This is a map of where Vietnamese Americans are. And again, this is from the 2000 census, so this might be different now, but predominantly there are clusters of where Vietnamese Americans live. Although I did look up, you know, Denver, and there is actually a lot of Vietnamese Americans here in Denver. Primarily, they're in California. About half of the Vietnamese Americans live in California, with two huge population centers, one in, around Orange County in Southern California and one in Northern California, where we're based. Washington, the state of Washington, Washington, D.C., and the surrounding area, Texas, and the Northeast are sort of major population center. Just a brief review of the socioeconomic and healthcare indicators. The most important thing about Vietnamese Americans in terms of what the health research data shows is this first line, which is that about 55% of Vietnamese Americans adult speak English less than very well. This has some implication when you look at certain data sets because a lot of them are not done in language. The poverty rate, there's sort of this idea that Asian Americans are generally more well off than, say, the general population. This is not, absolutely not true when applied to Vietnamese Americans. The poverty rate is about 14%. Compare that to about 9% for non-Latino whites. And the poverty rate is significantly higher for those under the age of 18 and for those over the age of 65. About a third of those who are age 25 plus have less than a high school education. Compared with 11% for non-Latino whites. And actually, this is interesting to me because a lot of these people who have high school education didn't get them in the United States. A lot of them had their high school and college education in Vietnam. And even though education in general is a marker for better health, we don't really know what happens when someone's highly educated in another country and come here and settle into a socioeconomic situation that's less than what you would expect for their educational level. About twice as many Vietnamese Americans have no health insurance and have not seen a doctor in the past year compared to non-Hispanic whites. So in general, this is a population that's set up for health disparities. The second item that I'll talk about is the major health problems. And again, there's a limited amount of data out there. The most important thing to be said is that pretty much there is no national data set that is survey-based that has enough Vietnamese American to make any population-based conclusion. That's number one. And number two, the ones that have some Vietnamese in it, again, are done in English, and at best, they're also done in Spanish. And so you're basically missing anywhere from a half to two-thirds of the population when you survey them. There are some registry data that I'll show you that is more useful. So the leading causes of death among Vietnamese American is cancer, heart disease, stroke, accidents, flu and pneumonia, diabetes, and chronic lung disease. This is slightly different than the general population. You know, heart disease is the leading cause of death for most other ethnic groups, and cancer is here for Vietnamese. And of the seven most common causes, these are all the same as for the other populations, except that dementia, Alzheimer's dementia, is not here on this list. Just a quick piece of information about cardiovascular risk factors and knowledge of symptoms. We just published this paper last year where we basically compared data that we found on a telephone survey of about 4,200 Vietnamese in one county and 19,000 non-Hispanic whites in California. We did find that from the survey data that Vietnamese Americans had lower rates of obesity, of diabetes, coronary heart disease, and hypertension. This is not actually the same information that you would find looking up, say, the California Health Interview Survey. In that particular survey, they seem to have about the same amount of these diseases as non-Hispanic whites. We found that they also had trouble with certain risk factors. Fewer Vietnamese ate fruits and vegetables 5 times daily. The orders reversed there. Only 16% of them reported that, compared to 28% of non-Hispanic whites. And again, there are also fewer of them engaged in any kind of moderate or vigorous physical activity. And then one of the piece of information is that only about 60% knew that chest pain was a symptom of heart attack. So in terms of preventing morbidity and mortality from heart disease, obviously that's an important point that can be made in terms of public education. That's compared to about 80% for the general population. What about cancer? So I'm listed here some cancer data for whites and for Vietnamese. The top three there, prostate, lung, and colorectal, are the most common cancer for men, certainly in the white population. And the rates for those cancers are much less in the Vietnamese American population. I also listed two very rare cancers, liver and stomach cancer, which is really unusual in the general population. But their rates are much, much higher than compared to the whites. And I'll get back to liver in a minute. And for women, a very similar sort of information. Breast, lung, and colorectal are the most common. Again, the rates for these cancers are still lower among Vietnamese American women than they are among the general population. And for the rare cancer, liver and cervical cancer are sort of the more common problems among the Vietnamese American compared to the general population. One of the explanation, one of the issue around healthcare and health in prevention is that cancer screening rates are lower among Vietnamese Americans compared to non-Hispanic whites. This is data from the California Health Interview Survey, which some of you may know is a population-based survey that's actually done in English and in multiple Asian languages, including Vietnamese. So we cite those data for Vietnamese, and we don't cite data, say, for instance, from the National Health Interview Survey. But in general, Vietnamese American women are less likely to have been adherent with the Pap test. 30% have been non-adherent compared to 14% for the general population. Same sort of finding for mammograms and for colon cancer screening. Just a re-emphasis of the liver cancer incidence. This is for the men. The data is not that different for the women, although the rates are lower. If you look at the graph on the far right-hand side, the rate for liver cancer among non-Hispanic white is about 6 per 100,000. Very unusual disease. But if you look at Vietnamese on all the way on the right-hand side, the rate is about 55 per 100,000. That's a disparity rates of about 9 times, and you really don't see any kind of disparities in terms of incidence and prevalence of diseases of that magnitude. If you're interested in other Southeast Asian groups, they have this similar or worse. Cambodians and Laotians have really high rates of liver cancer. And this is a highly fatal disease, so the incidence rate is very close to the mortality rate. So you may know that for Asian immigrants in particular, the biggest determining factor for liver cancer is hepatitis B, having chronic hepatitis B. And so we went out and asked Vietnamese American about whether or not they've had a hepatitis B test. So this is a paper that just got published this year. We surveyed 1,700 Vietnamese Americans in two areas of the country. And only 61% had hepatitis B test. So one out of three didn't even know they had hepatitis B. And the prevalence of hepatitis B in this population is estimated anywhere from 1 out of 7 to 1 out of 10 of chronic hepatitis B. So it's a very high rate. And like I said, if you wait till you develop liver cancer to find out you have hepatitis B, it's pretty much too late. You really want to find that out when you're still asymptomatic. You can be treated and monitored appropriately. We ask questions for this population. I mean, they know a little bit about hepatitis B, but then we ask questions about, do you know how hepatitis B is transmitted? So the top three are the incorrect ways that hepatitis B is transmitted. So it is not transmitted this way. And basically only about anywhere, so we asked, for instance, do you think cigarette smoking transmits hepatitis B? And only 46% knew that. Only 32% knew that sharing food and utensils did not transmit hepatitis B, and only 47% knew that sneezing didn't transmit hepatitis B. So very high rates of misinformation and lack of knowledge. And then when it comes to the actual ways in which hepatitis B are transmitted, they also didn't know. So for instance, for sex, only 54% knew that hepatitis B was transmissible through sex. So we get the feeling that, first, I didn't know very much, and chances are if they were trying to do something preventive, they were doing something wrong to prevent it. I'm not going to get too much into the multivariate model for this particular survey. The most important thing to think about is, you know, in terms of risk we talk a little bit about factors that determine how Vietnamese Americans behave in terms of health. And early on in the history of this population in the 80s and early 90s, there was a lot of talk about, you know, cultural beliefs and so on and so forth as being significant barriers. And we certainly think that cultural beliefs are important and they need to be addressed in terms of educating the population. But over and over again, we've done multiple studies where cultural beliefs is usually not a big determinant of why people do or don't do what's supposed to be good for them. So here in particular, you know, income is a significant predictor of not having been tested. The poor people don't get tested. There is one variable that did show the cultural effect, which is those who thought they can die from hepatitis B. In other words, it's sort of this measure of, very loose measure of the so-called fatalism measure. They were also less likely to have been tested. But really, when you come right down to it, when people are telling them to get tested, they will go get tested. So that's really the most important point. Another very important problem in Vietnamese American is smoking. The rates of smoking in Vietnam that we did in the 90s, I think it's different, a lot different now, but it was about 60% among Vietnamese men in Vietnam. In California, it's gone from anywhere from about 50% now down to this, the rate that we find here. So this survey we just did for the state of California in 2008, it was the first and largest statewide survey of tobacco behavior using the appropriate languages in English and Vietnamese. We surveyed 2,179 Vietnamese adults, and we found that 25% of the men are current smokers. That's compared to about 15% in California. So significantly, they're still smoking. The women are not smoking at all. And then we found factors associated with smoking, and again, the first row there just show you pretty much the same thing that you would see in pretty much any population. We also find higher association of alcohol use and depression in this population with smoking use. And then a few sort of very Vietnamese specific findings. If you spoke Vietnamese, you were more likely to smoke still than those who spoke English well. If you have a Vietnamese doctor, which I thought was an interesting finding, you were more likely to be smoking. And then if you had a prior Vietnamese military or re-education camp experience, you were more likely to smoke, as sort of the life history, things that happened during the war and after the war is a determinant of this. I don't have a lot of prevalence data on mental health problems, but in the California Health Interview Survey, they asked some questions about people. One of the problems with asking questions about depression and so on and so forth is actually it's somewhat stigmatized, or actually it's quite stigmatized, so people may underreport their symptoms. But in the California Health Interview Survey, they did ask some questions about stress and sort of exposure to mental health issues. And when they asked that question, then they asked, did you seek help or care for these issues. And if you look at the Asian rates, it's about 52% of people did not seek any help at all. And then when you look at the Vietnamese American rate, it's about 68% of the Vietnamese who've had some kind of mental health problems did not seek any help for it. So that's another sort of rising issue. In prior studies that were done in basically in the refugee clinics in San Francisco in the 90s, the rate of depression and PTSD were pretty high in this population, particularly among the men. So I'm going to move a little bit into some studies that we've done to address some of these issues. And first, I'm just going to tell you a little bit about the project that I'm here representing. This is the UCSF Vietnamese Community Health Promotion Project. The Vietnamese name for the program is called Sức khỏe là vàng, which is it's a saying, health is gold. And this project was founded in 1986. And our task is to do community-based assessment, outreach, and intervention research projects. And we carry out projects in various different parts of the country. And I mentioned that one project we did in Vietnam with tobacco survey. It's just a listing of our staff. I'm going to spend a little bit of time in a couple of slides talking about one project in detail, but I just want to show you that we have done a lot of work. And as a matter of fact, we kind of feel like in terms of community-based participatory research, particularly for health disparities, we've done a lot of this work. We've done three controlled trials, lay healthcare outreach, and one of media and community outreach targeting hepatitis B vaccination. The lay health worker outreach studies have shown that lay health workers can actually be very effective in encouraging these women to get breast and cervical cancer screening. And I'll get into detail in a little bit. The media and community outreach campaign in terms of hepatitis B vaccination, this was done actually at the end of the 1990s. And the idea was, of course, that hepatitis B vaccination is like one of the few cancer prevention vaccine that we have. And even though there are sort of rules and state laws regarding vaccination of children, the penetration rate is not as high as you would like to see. And this particular project looked at a couple of interventions, and we found that both media campaigns and community outreach really was effective. They actually did also a cost effectiveness study that showed that the whole intervention was cost effective. We also did some trials on media campaign on smoking, and what we found is actually not unusual for media campaigns in general, which is that media campaigns have a very wide reach but a very small overall effect on behavior on smoking among Vietnamese American men. And then we did also some media campaigns on breast and cervical cancer screening. So I'm just going to focus the last few minutes on this idea about this project that we did on cervical cancer. So this data actually is from the 1990s because that was when we started, that was what we saw from the SEER registry. So in the 1990 range time, the cervical cancer rate among Vietnamese women, American women, was about 42 per 100,000. And that was about six times or seven times higher than that for non-Hispanic whites. So because when we saw this data back in the mid-90s, we decided to do something about it. So what we did was to come up with a community-based participatory research project with a coalition to develop a multifaceted intervention. I think most of you who do community-based work understand that single interventions tend to not work very well, and multi-intervention, it's harder to measure the effect, but certainly much more likely to be effective. And basically, these are the six components, which I'll go over in a minute. We conducted actually very rigorous evaluation, relatively speaking. We did a quasi-experimental control design with a cross-sectional pre-intervention and post-intervention telephone survey in the intervention county, which is Santa Clara County, which is in Northern California, and Harris County in Texas, which was our comparison community. And the survey sample from pre and post is about 3,575 Vietnamese women, adult women. And this was funded by the CDC. So how do we do this kind of work? Setting the groundwork is very important. We basically spent about a year building a coalition. We built the coalition together with a bunch of organizations, which I'll show you. The coalition itself identified a vision and a mission and developed a community action plan. Within the coalition itself, the research organization, that's us, we only had one vote and everyone else had a vote. So the researchers didn't really drive sort of the decision-making process. The coalition met every 2 to 3 months to evaluate interventions and plan for the future. And then the coalition are basically the leaders of the community, but they also seek input from the general community members through community forums every year. These are the agencies that were involved in our coalition. They are drawn from organizations that provide services directly to this community, health organizations, health provider groups, insurers, and the Department of Public Health, as well as the researchers. So this campaign consisted of 6 elements. One is the media. The media include television and radio. These are just some samples of what the videos would look like. Very clearly, we use the same kind of people that we're trying to reach, Vietnamese people, women primarily, in the language that they listen to these ads in Vietnamese primarily. And we model different things, like we model a family-based approach to addressing cervical cancer and cervical cancer screening. We also had lots of images of physicians because we found that having a doctor making a recommendation was very powerful in this population. We also had print and promotional items. Again, a lot of that mirrored the video ads. We also used some very culturally appropriate instruments, such as like a calendar that people can use. This is a picture of one of our community forums, just to show that people do come to these things. We also implemented a lay health worker outreach campaign. Lay health worker outreach is defined and implemented very differently in many different places. And in this particular way that we did it, we basically recruited some women who then recruited their family and friends, and then they basically talked to them about the importance of getting cervical cancer screening. The lay health worker used this thing that she's holding in her lap called a flip chart. And the flip chart's a very simple way for them to transmit the information without using a lot of high technology sort of issues. This is an example from the flip chart. You know, this is the front part of the flip chart. This is the part that actually the participants see. It's a very simple picture that says, do you know anything about cervical cancer? And then in the back of the flip chart is the speaking points for the lay health worker. So they're trained as just speak their way through the flip chart to transmit the information. A third component of what we did was very important. You don't see this a lot in research projects. We really believe that advocacy was a part of this whole process, both in terms of providing services and in terms of sustainability. There was, most of you probably know there's a low cost screening program for low-income and uninsured women for cervical and breast cancer screening that's actually federal, but it's actually implemented very variably in localities. And when we started this project in 1999, 2000, the county that we worked in didn't even have this program implemented. So one of the goals of this project was to encourage state health officials and the legislators to implement this particular funding for the county. And so we did a lot of these advocacy work, at least through our coalition. We also encourage participants to sign petitions so we can actually send it in, so that we would actually go to these meetings with like stacks and stacks of petitions, and we just throw it on the desk in front of them and say, well, it's not just us, this community is really asking for this. That was kind of quite powerful. While we were doing this project to tell people they need to get cervical cancer screening, we also felt the ethical obligation to provide the service if it wasn't available. So we worked together with the county health department to create like a small, a culturally appropriate cervical cancer screening clinic for these women. And then we also taught the physicians who took care of this population the need for this kind of thing. And we also helped them set up a registry system for this to remind people to get testing. So in terms of the quantitative analysis of this particular project, we did a pre and post intervention survey in the intervention community and the post in the control community. And so we put all the data together, and when we did a multivariate model to see what the intervention effect was. And so the odds ratio for the intervention effect is about 2. In other words, the likelihood that women who lived in the control community, intervention community, have had a Pap test ever was about 2 compared to the control community. Again, showing you data that basically say what I said before, which is the determinant of these activities are really socioeconomic sort of measures. The duration of the United States, the longer you've been in the United States, you were more likely to have the test done. If you have health insurance, you were more likely to have the test done. That's not surprising. If you have a usual place of care, you are more likely to have the test done. This we found kind of interesting. So if you had any kind of doctor other than a male Vietnamese doctor, you were more likely to have a test done. Having a male Vietnamese doctor was no better than having no doctor in terms of getting the test done. So there's something going on culturally. There's this idea that if you go to an ethnically concordant doctor, you were supposed to get better care. What we found here was there was a difference between gender concordance and ethnic concordance. And so that's important for this particular type of issue where obviously the woman might not want a man to do it, or maybe the male doctor is reluctant to bring it up or something. We don't really know exactly what was going on there. If a doctor treated the patient respectfully, this is not a surprising finding. And if you also were exposed to certain elements of the media campaign, you were more likely to get it done. What I want to tell you here is that there's nothing on here about culture or beliefs or this or that. I mean, we measure a lot of this stuff, and we, again, tailor the intervention to some of these ideas. But really, as a predictor for this kind of health behaviors, cultural belief is not a barrier. I mean, that's sort of the big take-home message for this and many other Asian population. Cultural beliefs need to be entertained and addressed, but they're not any more of a barrier for this population than they are for other populations. The thing about this project that I'm quite proud of is that it isn't just about getting people to get the Pap test done. Obviously, that's very important, but the way it was designed was to build capacity. We work with 5 community-based organizations through the Lay Health Worker Outreach Campaign so that they can actually learn how to do it themselves. And actually, 2 of them went out and got additional funding to do their own lay health worker work based on the capacity that they built. We're currently doing several other lay health worker outreach projects with them. The women who became lay health worker coordinators got very interested in research, so that was another piece of capacity building that we actually weren't expecting. And then the 50 lay health workers that we worked with, these are Vietnamese American women, many of whom were housewives or unemployed. You know, we have sort of stories about they were just at home, they didn't want to do anything. And by getting engaged in this, they got very proactive. They became very active in the community. So they are really, at the end of the day, they are really the big capacity building piece. And then the other thing that we were proud of was this idea that advocacy can be done within a research context. So the state of California reestablished this program that we were talking about, in not completely due to our work, but to some degree due to pressure from the community that was generated. And the testing was available not only for Vietnamese American women, obviously, but for all low-income women in the county. And then there was these other sort of system changes that we did. The coalition that we built is now still active 11 years after we started it, and they are incredibly active. They've now basically gone off and gotten their own 501c3 funding, and they are planning basically everything that goes on within the county on Vietnamese American health. They've actually managed to get this county supervisor to fund a needs assessment survey for this population because they understand sort of the political power of this coalition now. Right now, just wanted to finish by telling you about what we're still doing. We're still doing this project on hepatitis B. We're doing a media campaign on that. We're also doing a controlled trial lay health worker outreach to promote colorectal cancer screening in this population. And then we just recently got funded for several pilot projects which look at Vietnamese American health in some issues, like for instance, smoking cessation. We don't feel like we have a handle on how to get people to stop smoking. We're beginning to address issues like advanced directive completion. There's a huge problem with pretty much everyone on advanced, and people not completing their advanced directive, which is their due power of attorney for healthcare and their preference in the end of life care. But in Asian Americans, it's much, much worse. And then we're looking into this idea of what a Vietnamese American social network is. What does that mean? It may be very different from what a Vietnamese network, social network in Vietnam is, and how that might work. So in conclusion, Vietnamese Americans have many health needs and significant health disparities. There are demonstrated effective interventions to address some of these disparities, and community-based participatory research is feasible and effective in this population. Thank you.
This paper is now open for discussion. Questions? Yes.
I really salute your work and the community group's support. I sort of beg the question of whether male Vietnamese physicians were also giving the same instructions
Yeah, you know, we basically did the same educational outreach to the population of Vietnamese physician working in that area. I think one of the idea that we had was that maybe this is a little bit of a cohort effect, that a lot of the Vietnamese doctors in America, the older ones at least, were trained in Vietnam back in the war days, and if you can imagine what they were doing back then was a lot of acute care and trauma care and prevention, such as thinking about someone smoking or doing a pap test, you know, those are probably not things they were really highly urged to do. And so for the 20 or 30 years since they've been here, that class, that group of doctors probably are, and they're predominantly male, were probably the ones who are not really doing, not paying attention, we think. But we don't really know the answer to that question. So.
Other questions? I have one. Please.
In your presentation, described the rate of the liver cancer of the in the Vietnamese in the American is the highest, and in the Asia is the second largest. In the London is the second largest after Laos.
Right.
And now, to my understanding, the rate of the liver cancer is the Vietnamese in Vietnam still.
Absolutely.
So that's from that results from the environment or from the natural, from the nature or from the infected system or the gene.
Yes. So the question is, you know, not just in here but also in Asia, the rates of liver cancers are really high. I think it's predominantly the effect of hepatitis B. The question then comes up, well, why do Asians have more hepatitis B than other groups? Why is it more endemic in that population? And that's a harder question to explain. And I think some of that has to do with certain health practices. A lot of this is endemic transmission. But the idea is that I totally agree with you. Actually, liver cancer is a huge problem in Asia, in Vietnam in particular. So,
one last quick question. If I understood your slides, men, Vietnamese American men who had jobs and were married did more smoking?
Let me just go back to that for a second. Let me just show that slide for you. Yes, the answer is yes. I just want to make sure. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. I think that's part of the issue that we're having, trying to deal with all this, is that we don't know exactly why this is happening and how to. Actually, it does lead to our idea of wanting to work with family as a mean of reaching these people. So.
Surprising. Thank you very much for attending. Thank you very much for a great presentation.
Thank you.
This is it.